All aircraft reporting.
Red 7, standing by. Red 11, standing by.
Math, standing by.
Flippy here. I'm okay.
Red 5, standing by.
Red 2, standing by.
Brian, standing by.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Red 3, standing by.
Falco here. I'm fine.
Red 10, standing by.
Red 6, standing by.
Iris! Ah! No, this isn't happening! There's no reason for me to go on! What? What am I fighting for?
What?
Damn it.
Damn it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Retro Odyssey. Joining me are co-hosts Matt, Steven, and Adam.
Hello.
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 Before we get going, what have you been playing this last month?
For me, mostly, I've been playing Jewel Quest 2, actually, which I found in a charity shop for 99p, which, I know, the exorbitant price of video games these days. But it's got, like, 180 levels. It's a gem-matching game, basically, and it's a lot of fun. I really kind of like match three kind of games for some reason. And out of those 180 levels, I'm probably about 20 away from the end now. So it's a good job that last week in charity shop, I found Jewel Quest 3 for £1. So that is going to be my game going forward after that, I'm sure. Plus, I've been continuing playing Final Fantasy 14. And two of the games I've been playing will be going into in more depth in the next episode when everyone has had a chance to play them, but I've been playing Bloodstained and Crash Team Racing, which I literally just got this morning, both of which are excellent. But we're going to discuss them a bit more when more people have had a bit of a chance to give them a go.
Yeah.
It's not actually out on the Switch yet, so I've not even had a chance to dive into it.
Is it now? I just got a thing that said it was.
No, 25th. Is when it's out, so I haven't got my code yet as a backer, so I'll be playing.
Oh,
that
you're talking about Bloodstained.
Bloodstained, yeah. Oh, yeah, Crash.
I thought Crash was definitely out on Switch. I'm going to pick it up here pretty quick. Probably on Switch, even though I've heard that the load times are atrocious.
Yeah. I've got no interest in Crash Team Racing, so I'll just wait for Bloodstained.
Bloodstained is excellent.
Better than Symphony of the Night?
No. It's I mean, Symphony of the Night benefits from having the iconic characters, the iconic settings, which obviously this doesn't have because they weren't allowed to use it, but it plays pretty much exactly the same. I would say, difficulty-wise, it's a little bit harder, but I'm getting there. I'm currently stuck on the second boss, but I'm making progress.
Well, that's good to hear. It's good. For me, I've been playing Cat Quest on the Switch, which is like an RPG. It's only like a small-scale RPG, so it doesn't take too long to beat. And, you know, it's quite simple, but it's really fun. Like, the combat is real-time combat, and you've got, like, a good dodge mechanic, you've got magic and stuff like that, and it's really good fun. I mean, the quests don't do anything, like, majorly, like, inventive, but they're still fun enough to do. They've got like their own mini stories and stuff. Like there's a haunted town that you've got to investigate. But it's really good. It's got dragons in it and it's got cats. So it's definitely something I'd recommend. It's like a really budget game as well. And to say it's an RPG, I actually enjoy it, which is not something I can say about a lot of RPGs. I also beat my friend Pedro yesterday, which is pretty good. It's a kind of an arcade-y style game. It sort of plays like Wet, if you ever played that on the 360, but in 2D, where it's just kind of mayhem and getting combos and really stylish kills and things. Again, that's really neat. And currently I'm replaying Resident Evil, but it's a HD remaster, which is the first time I'm playing the remastered version of Remake, because I've only ever played the GameCube one. So I've been playing some pretty good games this month.
Yeah, that HD remaster is really good.
It's good.
The controls aren't the best. I keep going for the modern controls because I like being able to change direction whenever I want, rather than, you know, doing the standard turnaround with tank controls. But flicking between the, you know, the static camera often sends me going in a direction I don't want. I played through Resident Evil Zero, so I'm sort of used to it, but I'm still kind of like running into walls and stuff. I mean, I still prefer it to the tank controls overall, I guess, but I don't think it's like 100% perfect. But I think that's more to do with that kind of control scheme in a static camera situation rather than, you know, anything else.
It's like the same control scheme kind of as Resident Evil 4 in terms of the movement, but it's just a little bit more difficult to move when you've got the static cameras rather than Resident Evil 4, which didn't.
Yeah, I think because the static cameras and it's constantly changing the angle of things, so you're not always facing, like, north, for example, it makes it a bit more difficult than, obviously, the free camera. So I think they did the best with what they could, because I know a lot of people don't like tank controls. So I don't hate it. It's just that it's... I think it's one of those things where you think, oh, it's a brilliant idea, this will be perfect, and then it doesn't quite control as well as you would imagine it does. But I'll say it doesn't spoil it, and I think overall it's probably better than tank controls, but...
I believe these speedrunners still use the tank controls because it allows for more precise kind of angles and stuff.
Yeah, I think, like, when I have to line up to pick up certain items, I find that switching to the D-pad just so I can do the old-fashioned tank controls to line up is a lot easier. And I think that if you were using tank controls, you would definitely be able to direct your movement with a lot more precision. So I can understand why speedrunners would use that. But for casual play, I think probably the modern ones work the best. But I don't mind tank controls, so whatever.
I do. I have been playing a lot of Lego Racers. I got it finally to work on my laptop with that Windows 10. And
second one or the first one?
The first one.
Alright.
And I grew up with this game as a kid. I love it. It's super great. Slam through that. I've also been playing a lot of Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, revisiting that from back in the day, and it's pretty solid. It's kind of glitchy running on Windows 10, but I mean, it's that game was 2000, I think.
Yeah.
2001.
I always ran out of patience building roller coasters because I kept fucking it up.
I run out of money is my problem.
Well, yeah, I used to always cheat to get like millions and millions and then just make really extravagant roller coasters, and people just either not go on them or they just puke.
Right. I have one that just spins you in circles, basically. It's just a loop.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I think
the idea of Roller Coaster Tycoon is better than the actual game itself. It is relaxing and it's still fun. But I find that creating a good roller coaster, you've got to have the right mind for it.
It was much easier to do in Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, but that's because you could move the camera around however you wanted to versus having to sort of the four angles. And the collision detection for tracks was much, much better.
I used to like creating death traps and making roller coasters which would seem to work, but then the roller coaster would just fly off the tracks.
Oh, yeah, the shuttle loop. You didn't even have to do anything with the shuttle loop other than change the launch speed to max, and it would fly off the end of the track. Also, I've just been keeping up on the Smash Bros. Ultimate. That's what I've been binging the last day, trying to get Little Mac to Elite Smash, and it's mixed results.
Nice. I stopped playing Smash quite a while ago. I beat Adventure Mode, and then I was just kind of drained. I'll probably revisit it when Banjo comes out. But for me, it's going to be one of those games that I dip into for multiplayer play, like for local multiplayer, that is. And yeah, that's probably about it.
Beat up your friends for a little while. And
yeah, I mean, it's a good game, but I think from a single player perspective. I don't think I'll play it single player that often from now on.
I go online, so
I've not had the best experience online, so I don't bother with it.
Fair enough. What about you, Steven?
Well, the main thing I've been playing lately is Splatoon 2 and some old Spider-Man games. Getting ready for the final Splatfest for Splatoon 2 next month.
You playing Spider-Man? That one was released on the PlayStation 64. Are you playing that Spider-Man Ultimate? I guess it'd be Ultimate Spider-Man.
I'm actually playing Spider-Man Web of Shadows on the 360 currently.
I never got to play that. I heard it was okay, though.
I mean, I thought it was fantastic. It's interesting because one of the mechanics in that game basically was the entire game for Spider-Man Friend or Foe, but, you know, not done as well.
Which was the GameCube one? Was that Spider-Man 2?
Spider-Man, the movie, the game, and Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game, were both on GameCube.
So I remember playing, like, one that was really good and used to swing through the streets and do side missions and shit like that.
Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game.
Because they did, an anime-style one, didn't they? Which was, like...
That was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, I didn't play that one. It was
They used a very similar mechanic to, swinging mechanics to the Spider-Man 2 games, which were super, super good. But then also, it popped off and let you play as Venom, which was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's what I've been doing.
Well, sounds like everybody's had a pretty busy month. How about we hop on into the news?
Which has also been a busy month because June was E3.
It was. Got quite a few interesting things. Lots from Nintendo.
Yeah, but basically my news bit is just Nintendo's E3 press conference.
Yeah. I mean, they released the Mana Collection, which is funny because last month we talked about how we're never going to get the third game. Yeah, we're never going to get that. And then, boom, here they go.
Yeah, just last month I was giving them shit for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Square Enix trying to make us look like idiots.
We don't need their help.
I was about to say that.
Hyperkin revealed their Ultra 64, their Ultra Retron 64.
That is a must-buy for me. I mean, depending on the price.
They had the reveal and they showed it off. I haven't got any... good details here. Once someone pointed out, because they were showing off Mario Kart 64, it's definitely emulation, they're emulating hardware, because the Megatron on Luigi's Raceway was not showing the live feed from the actual racers, which is something that the game does. Because apparently that's a very, very, very difficult thing to emulate.
I mean, it makes sense.
And they're like, well, we've seen this in a whole lot of emulators, and basically getting that to emulate requires a lot of computing power, more than I realized. So I'm going to hold out for a solid hands-on review before I, throw any money at it. But I do have two N64s that are both finally dying, so if it's good, I'll do that as my standard replacement.
Yeah, mine's on its way out. Playing one of the games for our topic that we're going to discuss later on, it kept resetting itself over and over and over again. I eventually got it to work for about an hour and a half consistently, then it reset itself again. I was fucking hell.
Mine's fine, but I kind of think it's kind of on its way out. I don't think it's going to be fine for much longer. I've had it a long time.
Yeah. And considering the excellent library that 64 had, most 64s at this point have had thousands of hours logged into them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My N64 is the only console that I have that is still the one that I had when I was a kid.
I still have my original as well.
I have my original and most of the other originals.
Nice.
They're getting tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, I think a lot of physical media is going to start to decline over the next decade or so. And things are just going to stop working, and we're going to resort to having to get stuff like this just to keep on playing the old stuff.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but there you go. Anyway, speaking of N64, there was another bit of N64 news. There's the return of Banjo-Kazooie.
Yes, sort of. To a degree.
We briefly mentioned it while you were talking about Smash, but Banjo got announced for Smash.
And I just want to say, I called it.
You know what? I've always been saying I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. Microsoft and Nintendo have been, like, really buddy-buddy, so it seemed like something potentially could happen.
Well, and here's the very interesting thing about it is people kept talking to Microsoft being like, hey, you know, let them put Banjo in Smash Brothers. And Microsoft continually said, it's not us stopping it.
Well, the thing is, in order to use the rights, Microsoft's going to get some kind of money from the DLC. And then obviously they've got publicity for Banjo. So really, apart from, you know, the good press for Smash Brothers, it's going to be Microsoft that get more out of it than Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, after all, the Smash Fighters pack is, people are going to really buy the pack for all the DLC fighters. So Banjo's not really going to sell that many more packs, I imagine.
He might now.
He might do. I mean, I'll buy the individual one for Banjo because I couldn't give a shit about Joker or the Dragon Quest dude. But Nintendo are going to make a bit more money from it, but Microsoft are going to be the ones that get more from it. Which brings me to another thing. Normally, they have representation on a Nintendo console. Like, obviously, you've got things like Cloud and stuff, and Joker, which, obviously, you've got Final Fantasy on the Switch. You've got the upcoming Persona game, which, whilst it's not a proper Persona game, it's Persona 5 Royale or something. It's still something. Right. Which begs the question, are we going to see something of Banjo?
Yes.
Banjo HD, or what I would prefer, the Rare Replay Collection. Or maybe even a Banjo sequel is also very possible.
I mean, didn't they announce that Banjo-Kazooie is going to be released on Switch?
Not quite. There was like an Amazon Germany listing for it, which got quickly took down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Which could mean something, or it could mean nothing. Something's going to happen.
More likely we would see a Rare Replay on Switch than anything.
Well, to be honest, I mean, even if they didn't do Rare Replay and they just went, okay, we don't want to give you all of it because some of these never came out on a Nintendo console. But what we'll do is the Banjo games, you know, maybe like Perfect Dark, Jet Force Gemini, Blast Corps, the old SNES games, for example. You can have those, but you've got to buy them individually, which will work out to be more expensive. But honestly, that would do for me if they just went, okay, here's a bunch of classic Nintendo games made by Rare. You can buy them separately.
Or what would be just as slick is if they just did, here's the Banjo-Kazooie collection, because that's three games and one no one wants.
Well, no, I mean, there's five games, really, in total. So, I mean, they could do a proper collection.
Which one am I missing?
Well, there's Banjo, Banjo-Tooie, Nuts and Bolts. There's Grunty's Revenge. Banjo Pilot.
I'd never heard of that game. How did I miss that one?
It's basically Diddy Kong Racing, but with Banjo Kazooie.
Oh, yeah, I missed that.
Despite the fact that Banjo is in Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah, right.
Diddy Kong Racing. But yeah, I mean, they could do like an enhanced version of Rare Replay and release it on the Switch.
Yeah, because they do like to put Nintendo stuff in games like that. Like, I think Bayonetta on Wii U had extra stuff in it.
Mm-hmm. They could even do maybe a deluxe version of Rare Replay that includes stuff like DK64 and Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh man, I would pay so much money for that.
That would actually be really cool if we got a very special the Nintendo Rare Replay where it pulled all of the Nintendo, specifically the Nintendo titles.
Well, Microsoft obviously would be getting money from that anyway because they're publishing it. But I mean, really, they could work out some kind of deal, and if it's only got like Diddy Kong Racing and DK64 and stuff like that, they may even be able to swing it so that they can re-release the collection with an enhanced version with the extra stuff like on the Xbox. You know, they may be able to get away with that. I mean, Nintendo releasing stuff on phones these days, so
it's true.
It's possible.
Microsoft and Nintendo seem to have like a very good relationship, so I can definitely see a Rare Replay happening.
Yeah. I mean, how far it will go is anyone's guess, but, you know, it could happen. I think we're certainly going to see something Banjo-related on the Switch because of this Smasher announcement. As to what it will be, though, whether it'll be a Banjo collection, a sequel, or whatever, it's anyone's guess.
I would love to see
Rare Replay with Donkey Kong Country and Diddy Kong Racing and all that, that'd be great.
You know what? If Rare Replay got released on the Switch, I would be so happy. Because I think that's one thing that would make the Switch like my favorite console, even above the Saturn. Because then I could play stuff like Perfect Dark, Jet Force Gemini, Blast Corps.
Yeah.
Favorite N64 games on my Switch.
All that good, good.
And then when Metroid Prime Trilogy and stuff comes out on it, eventually, it's going to be so fucking good, the Switch.
It's already one of the best consoles ever, and it's only 2 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, which also connects to the Saturn, one thing coming out on the Switch is Panzer Dragoon, the remake.
Yes.
That's going to be fucking amazing.
Well, I'm going to tamper your expectation a little bit. The company...
Why you got to be like this?
The company making it is called Forever Entertainment. If you Google the games they've done, they've made mostly mobile phone trash. They've made some stuff on the Switch, but they've basically been like mobile phone ports. And this isn't using the original source code for Panzer Dragoon, so they're making it from scratch.
Oof. That actually might not be great.
That's what's making me a bit cautious. What we saw from the trailer looked promising. Like, they seem to be doing the mechanics well, and, like, the cutscenes and stuff looked really nice. So I'm optimistic, but cautiously.
I mean, okay, here's the thing. That means that someone like me can actually play the game.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's at the very least, you know, letting people who've never played the game before be able to play it. Yeah, and what's even better, I mean, like, Panzer Dragoon, you can play that. On PC, you can play it via Auto as an unlockable. However, Panzer Dragoon Zwei, the sequel, was only on the Saturn. And do you know what else they're doing, Forever Entertainment? They're going to be remastering Panzer Dragoon Zwei as well. They've announced that they're doing the first two games. So at the very least, people will be able to play the first two games.
So they're not doing Saga, then?
That's a slightly bit more of an ambitious project if they did Saga. Saga's quite a huge RPG, and they don't have source code or anything, so...
I saw that in a local shop for, like, £300 last week.
Yeah, it's the cheapest of games. I mean, in America, it goes for thousands, I think.
Wow.
It's very, very expensive.
Yeah, I think like, maybe not thousands. I think it's, like, 600 maybe or something, but it's...
It's
not
way too much.
I mean, it's a fantastic game, and
it's not... Is it $600 good, though?
No, it's not even 300. Good.
I don't think there's any game I would pay that much for.
But you know what? I don't regret buying it. I got it for, you know, a fair amount, but I enjoyed it. I really liked it, and it's going to be something that I treasure in my collection. But I kind of think, you know, maybe like half the amount I paid would have been a price that would have been worth it. You know, the going price isn't ideal, but it's still a really good game. So I mean, for someone who hates JRPGs, I got it and I loved it, so I kind of think a lot of people who get it would probably like it.
Well, I think there's only one more thing we really need to jump on, and that is to follow up with the rest of the Genesis Mini Library, or Mega Drive Mini, depending on where you live, because they did announce that probably a week after we recorded, or so, a week or two.
Before we discuss the remaining games, did you see the Japanese special release of the Mega Drive Mini? It includes, like, the Sega CD and the 32X. Yep. Yep. I mean, it doesn't do anything, and it's not going to play those games.
What was it, Sonic 2 or a Sonic and Knuckles on the top?
Yeah. I think it's Sonic 2 or something. Or it could be Sonic 1. I think it might have been Sonic 2.
Anyway, it's the Genesis full stack, and it looks pretty epic.
It does look really cool. I mean, as I say, it's a bit iffy because it's got that and it doesn't include any Sega CD games or 32X games, you know, until it's hacked, I suppose. But yeah, it looks really cool.
Of course, they get all the good stuff. Anyway, yeah, they dropped on, instead of 40 titles, we got 42 titles come in.
Yeah, there's a couple of bonus ones in there.
Yeah, Virtua Fighter 2, Alisair Dragoon, Columns, Dynamite Heady, Strider, which I had never heard of before, Kid Chameleon, Light Crusader, Monster World 4, Eternal Champions, and the one that I got really stoked about, Road Rash 2. Then we got their two bonus titles, which no one saw coming, being Tetris and Darius.
Road Rash 2 is excellent.
It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, quite a few of those games they announced are quite good. I mean, Dynamite Heady, I mean, it's often released on these collections, but Dynamite Heady's really good. I mean, people always say Gunstar Heroes was the classic treasure title on the Mega Drive, but honestly, I prefer Dynamite Heady. It's one of those games where you start playing it and it's difficult to get into, but like a few levels in, once you get to grips with the mechanics and how it works, the game's just so charming and it's got so much imagination and the gameplay changes all the time. It's a really inventive game and it's really cool.
And you mentioned Strider as well. I've not played the Mega Drive version, but I have the Master System version, which is very good.
Yeah, the Mega Drive one's a lot better. It's got that really cool sword, which is like the sword from Symphony of the Night. You know, the really overpowered one?
Mm-hmm.
The Wind Sword, I think is the English name of it. I don't know what it's called.
The Chrysogrim?
The Chrysogrim, yeah. I think it translates to Wind Sword or something, or that's what the description is.
I mean, it still says Chrysogrim in the English version.
All right, fair enough. Well, yeah, it's like the Chrysogrim. It is a sword from Strider where it's just like an arc in front of you that takes care of everything. It's a cool game. Elysia Dragoon's also quite cool as well. You kind of get sick of it after about halfway, but it's a neat little concept. Plays a bit like Psychic Assassin Taramaru for the Saturn, but with some lass and a dragon.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty cool, and it never really gets released on these collections. And I think it was exclusive to the Mega Drive. So at the very least, it's a nice game for people to try out that they've never played before.
I do like that, now that we have this full list, it's pretty clear that they weren't like, oh, we're only going to pull out the games that scream Sega. Like, they didn't do Sonic 1, 2, and 3. They went after kind of what would be remembered the best, I guess I would say there. Like, they did pull out some super key titles like Golden Axe. Well, yeah, of course you're going to throw Golden Axe on there. You're going to throw Dynamite Heady on there. Virtua Fighter, you're going to throw on there.
So it doesn't have the Sonic games then?
It has, like, two Sonic games on it. It has Sonic 2 and Sonic the Hedgehog. Oh, and then there's... it has three, because isn't Eggman's... Dr. Robotnik's Mean Machines on here, so...
I think the problem is they should have had, like, maybe 60 games or something, because there's a lot of games on there, like, I don't think they have... Do they not have Streets of Rage 1?
I'm trying to scroll through right now. I don't think they do.
They only have Streets of Rage 2, so I think stuff like Streets of Rage 1 and 3 should have been on there. Sonic 3 and Sonic Knuckles, and hell, even Knuckles Chaotix, just for the pure shit of it. You know, Echo 2, maybe. All those kind of classic games, I think, should have just been on it as standard, plus the additional stuff. So maybe have like 60, but then 40 of them are kind of not the classic classics.
I mean, at 40, they're already showing up Nintendo's...
Oh, man, and how.
So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's still a really good list. I mean, on the bright side, it will be hacked pretty quickly. And then,
right.
You know, you can have all the games John, that you want. But the base list is pretty cool.
Maybe we'll get a Saturn Mini next.
I doubt it.
Now we'll skip it and go straight to the Dreamcast Mini.
Maybe.
Anyway, unless somebody else has anything else, I think we should move into our topic this month. So this month, we tackled the genre of shoot 'em ups, or as they say in showbiz, shmups. It's a long, exhaustive genre, starting all the way back as old as just the original arcades with whatnot of Centipede and Space Invaders, and they just keep making them. It's broken off into so many good subgenres like Bullet Hells and just all sorts of nonsense. We kind of switched our focus, but I mean, overall, I mean, who here has really gotten into the shmups probably mostly as kids, honestly. That's when they were really popular. I know I played a shitload of them.
I don't play any shmups as a child, apart from the one that we covered later in this episode.
Did you play Galaga?
Nope. I think maybe really? The closest I played was like Space Invaders.
Huh, interesting. Galaga machines are like super common here. You can still find those floating around various establishments.
I love Galaga. My brother actually had on Game Boy, I think he still has it, Galaga and Galaxian both on a double pack. And
oh,
I played
nice.
That a lot. Yeah, I played that a lot. I didn't like Galaxian as much, but God, that I fell in love with Galaga.
Galaxian's a lot slower.
It's so much slower, and you can't get the double ship either, so.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, why else are you playing?
Right. It's like, this one's not fun, but I love Centipede and Millipede, too, so those were a hell of a lot of fun.
When I was younger, back in the 80s, a lot of games were either platformers or shoot 'em ups that came out on the early home computers. So that was kind of my first introduction into it. So I played a hell of a lot of shmups back in the day. And there were platformers as well. Platformers hasn't kind of stuck with me as much. I don't really like platformers as much, apart from like the odd game here and there. But I do still enjoy shmups. There's just something about it. I mean, I am god-awful at them. I really am god-awful at them. But something about them just, I don't know whether it's just the aesthetic or just moving up and down, shooting stuff, and I don't know. I just really, really enjoy shmups. It's worth mentioning as well, you said they kind of like stretch all the way back to the arcades, or the what is recognized as like the very first game ever made was Computer Space, which ran on its own kind of like dedicated machine, and that was kind of like a very early Asteroids looking kind of thing, which you could say was kind of like the first shmup, the first video game. And so it does go all the way back to kind of like the dawn of video games,
because it's such a simple concept. And I think one of the things that makes shmups appealing, or at least flexible, is that it's such a basic concept. You can theme it however you want.
Yeah.
You can do like 1942, 1943, and do a World War II theme. You can have him set in space. You can have a little man with a gun. You can do like attack heli, and you're an attack helicopter over in some war zone. Doesn't really matter. You can have a boat. You can have them. Yeah, there's any setting you can think of, you could put it in there. You can do Abadox and do it inside of a giant creature.
You could have lots of gay naked men like Chonike.
Hey, wait, is that actually a thing? Asking for a friend.
Yes, it is. It's
oh my
for
God.
Almost naked men flexing, and you're an almost naked man flying through the air shooting them. It's very homoerotic, but it's kind of fantastic.
Was this arcade or Saturn release?
There's a Chonike on the Saturn, but I think it's the same as the one that was on the SNES. And there's loads of Chonike games, but I think they're mainly in Japan.
Which so you'd be sense. Able to play
on the Pine stuff, yeah.
Right.
They also made a Chonike fighting game as well on the SNES. I've not played that, though.
That sounds like something I want to check out.
You should have suggested that when we started the research for this episode.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll cover the fighting game when we do fighting games.
There you go, let's do that.
But yeah, I think that's probably going to be the key thing that would get me to like a shmup, is probably the theme. For example, Darius Gaiden, which I don't know if you've ever played any of the Darius games. It's basically like Space Fish. And it's kind of great because everything's all kind of aquatic themed, so it's sort of Lovecraftian to an extent, but instead of with tentacles and stuff, it's mainly like, you know, traditional fish. So you've got like these mechanical fish, and you've got like all these other kind of aquatic creatures and stuff in space, and you're just shooting them down. It's really cool. And in Darius Gaiden as well, you've got a weapon that's like a literal black hole, which will just suck everything into it. I mean, I played on like the easiest difficulty because I'm really bad at the games. But the aesthetic is what drew me to it. And because the easiest mode is kind of playable because of all the black hole bombs that you've got.
Right.
I kind of enjoyed it. Not loads, but I enjoyed it enough to think, okay, I probably will play this again in the future. But most of the time, like, I don't think the aesthetic's enough to appeal to me just because I don't really like the genre that much. I mean, I'd probably be interested in, like, maybe a cyberpunk or, you know, maybe a steampunk, I suppose.
Kind that of could aesthetic. Be fun.
Yeah, I think there are some steampunk games. Like, I think Gunbird's supposed to be, like, a steampunk shmup, which I think's available on the Switch, but I've not played it. And obviously Mega Man 8 has a shmup section, so I like that.
Right.
But, I mean, I didn't like it at first, but because I've played it so much, I can do it now with no effort, so I sort of enjoy it.
You don't hate it?
I don't hate it. I think that's probably the biggest compliment I can give to a shmup.
At least you're being honest.
But what about you guys? How important is, like, the theme and the general kind of aesthetic of it to your enjoyment of a shmup? Does that bother you like it does with me? Like I say, for me, it's the most important thing, just because I don't like the gameplay.
I think aesthetics kind of plays an important part. I mean, the first game that we're going to kind of like discuss in depth, you showed us a video of a more recent port, and it just looks so awful visually. And it's like, I wouldn't have fun with that just because of how it looks. Which I know graphics aren't really the be all and end all, but it just looks so cheap and tacky, and I would feel dirty playing it.
Well, funny you should say that. I mean, the reviews for it are really good, so people seem to like it, and they even praise the visuals. So, you know, maybe it looks better while you're actually playing it.
Maybe.
You know, there are some games like that, like is it Raging Justice? You know, the side scrolling beat 'em up that got released on the Switch. That, in screenshots, just looks terrible. But when you play it, it's pretty good. So maybe this is a similar kind of thing where it's actually all right when you're playing it.
Well, kind of like that new Streets of Rage game as well. It looks really weird in screenshots, but when you see it running, it looks really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it.
But yeah, aesthetics are kind of a thing. I'm like a child. I like the appeal of bright colours and lots of stuff moving about, and there's a certain joy to be had in really bright, fast-moving games.
I'm with you on that. I mean, the genre which gets classified as cute-em-ups, I definitely find a bit more visually appealing than standard ones.
Yeah, stuff like Fantasy Zone.
Yeah, stuff like Fantasy Zone, stuff like the Parodius games, for example. Stuff that's really bright and cute. I mean, there's one called, I think it's the Game Arcade or something, which, I don't know if it got released on the PlayStation, but it got released on the Saturn, and it's themed around arcade games. So there's one which is like sort of a Paperboy-style level, and there's another which is like Space Invaders, and it goes into like different arcade games, and that's the theme, and the level's based around that. But stuff like that, which is just imaginative and full of bright colours, I find more appealing, and I'm a bit more likely to enjoy it.
Yeah, so it's not the most important thing, but it is a deciding factor for me in a lot of cases. It's got to look nice.
Yeah, I mean, the game that we covered this episode, I mean, the graphics don't look too bad, I suppose, but the visual style of it just wasn't really for me. It's just, I mean, shmups are typically like space things, and this was just a space thing. So this just seemed to be the stereotypical shmup. Yeah. The game of which, you know, we didn't mention yet, but we covered R-Type. I mean, what did you think of, you know, R-Type's aesthetic?
I've played R-Type a little bit before, and I've played it a little bit again, and it's very generic spacecraft. I mean, like, you can get a very similar feel from Gradius, although I will say this is not as hard as Gradius.
It was one of the earliest ones of that style, though, so the fact that it looks like a lot of other games, that isn't really R-Type's fault.
Right. Well, like I said, space is so easy to do because you don't have to do backgrounds and stuff. You can just do the blackness of space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, I don't hold it against it. It's just that because it's nothing special and I dislike the genre, that's why it didn't really jump out at me like, oh, this is something, you know, special, something fantastic. It's just, this is just what I consider to be a stereotypical schmuck.
I was going to say, I do think it probably got help because of just the Deep Space backgrounds was the sprite work in R-Type is quite nice. It's clean and shiny versus you do something like Destination Earthstar, half the game is a shoot 'em up. It's a side-scrolling shoot 'em up. And it's really rough to look at. It's very bland, very basic, and super, super hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that kind of puts me off shmups is I find them quite difficult, especially the ones that are classified with bullet hell. Mm-hmm. I just find them to be too obnoxious. And I think you don't get to appreciate the game as much, because rather than focusing on the game, you end up focusing on the enemy bullets, and you're just basically sidestepping bullets, and that's the game, is just trying to do precise movements around individual bullets, which I just find to be a bit stressful and not very entertaining.
No, and I agree. When you get into games like Abadox and R-Type and Gradius, especially the later Gradius games, where they're legendary hard, but all you're doing is, you know, sweating bullets while you're trying to stay alive, watching a playthrough, something like that, you can really take it all in, and it's easier to appreciate it.
Despite me playing like quite a lot of R-Type when I was a kid, still playing it up to this day, I have still never beaten level 3. I was playing it last week, and level 3 is my roadblock.
I do the same thing in Battletoads. I can get up to the jet race in the fire zone, and I can't complete it. I've gotten so close, and I just can't beat it.
Yeah, and that annoys me, because for me, that's most shmups. I mean, stuff like, for example, Ghouls and Ghosts, I'm kind of the same, where if I've not played it in a while, I won't get very far. I might get, you know, a couple of levels in, and then it starts to get quite difficult, and then I struggle to get beyond that point until I'm, you know, into the swing of things again. But Ghouls and Ghosts is more of an outlier to the genre, whereas that is the genre for shmups. And I just find it to be annoying, like it's trying to purposely be obnoxious just for the sake of it.
There are people who find that really, really appealing, though, and people who are really good at it. The more harder bullet hell ones, they're not really made for a general audience. They're made for that really hardcore crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking to someone today about shmups, and there was a shmup on the Saturn, which I played relatively recently, which is Soul Divide. I mean, I played on the Switch, but it was originally on the Saturn. And they went, oh, you know, if you've beaten it and you enjoy it, try and clear it in one credit. And it was just like, nope. You know, the idea of clearing a shmup in one credit just sounds annoying. Because, I mean, the games are hard enough as it is, so doing it with one credit is just silly. I mean, Soul Divide as well is a little bit different because it's not like a credit just makes you respawn. It's a continue. So if you die, you have to start from, like, the start of the level again. I mean, the levels aren't particularly long, but I don't feel like doing one credit makes a difference. It just makes it more annoying because, like, your health doesn't refill between each level. So you'd basically be doing it all in one life, which would be silly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do that personally. I mean, at least R-Type has checkpoints at various parts of the level. So if you get like a certain way through a level, it will put you back at that point if you die.
Yeah.
Since we were just talking about the aesthetic of R-Type, I'd like to just bring up how this was also an example of how popular Alien was, the movie Alien, because the very first boss you roll up against is more or less a xenomorph, except different.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think it influenced a lot of games back then.
It did, and this was just another example. I mean, Contra was not even shameful about it.
Yeah, I mean, level 2 in R-Type, when you've got those aliens that drop down from the ceiling and come up from the floor, they are xenomorphs.
They're like, xenomorphs.
Yeah, they're orange instead of black. That's the difference.
And we're getting down to the point where it could have been almost a lawsuit.
What was that game that we played for another episode which literally had, like, actual alien xenomorphs in it?
Oh, what was it?
I don't remember.
Yes, Mega Turrican, that was the one.
Yeah.
So a lot of games back then did use it.
It was quite subtle with the references earlier on, and then it gets that one level, and it's basically just Alien.
I mean, there's a game called Alien Syndrome on the NES and a bunch of other systems that one of the levels is, again, the shameless Alien ripoff that's just barely distinct enough to avoid a lawsuit.
I mean, shoot, even, TMNT. We did TMNT Turtles in Time, and they had the sewer, or had the pizza monsters, which were aliens. Yeah. It was just a popular theme that was very, very prevalent. So you make the money right there. Let's just make an alien game and hope we don't get sued.
Yeah, just change the name of it and suddenly it's fine. I mean, EA changed the name of loot boxes to surprise mechanics and suddenly they're fine again.
Oh, boy.
Oof. And then once surprise mechanics are illegal, then they'll change it to something else.
Right. You just got to be one step ahead the entire time. The
thing is, it won't be so bad, but I mean, how stupid must people be to fall for that? Because it's so blatantly obvious that they just talk shit. Like, even when they said, oh, people love them. Yeah, of course they do. Paying for stuff that used to be free. I'm sure they're fucking having a field day.
I mean, I don't think anyone actually fell for that. I think they just think people fell for it.
We can only hope.
Or they were trying to fool people.
Like, well, let's be honest, they're trying to fool the government so they don't get regulated.
Well, they should stop being knobheads to avoid being regulated. Are that for a controversial idea?
I mean, yeah, I'm with you.
Anyway, R-Type.
R-Type.
Music's pretty good.
Yes. It's
very kind of jaunty.
No, that was quite good. The upgrade system, it's pretty solid. Side-scrolling, shoot 'em up, everyone's done it, but I liked how you had a nice visual cue as to what's going on with your ship.
Yeah, I also like the fact that you have that orange ball, which you can position either in front of you or behind you, and it can act either as a shield, or you can shoot it forwards, and it can act as, like, a secondary gun. That's, like, one power-up that has, like, three different uses.
Yeah. It definitely was a nice flex versus just, like, I picked up an orb, and now my bullets have changed.
Mm. Yeah, I think some of the pickups can be, you know, quite good. They can be quite good in, you know, like a lot of shmups. Like I mentioned before about Darius Guy then, you've got the Black Hole Bomb, which is quite good. And like Soul Divide, you've got like all the magic spells and things, which, you know, like one of them, like this huge creature comes out and just attacks everything. I think it's like dragon. So I think they do spectacle rather well and do some pretty good weapons. Like with a lot of shmups, you tend to get like all these upgrades, and then by the time you're fully upgraded, you're a bit of a monster.
Yeah. But then the problem with, again, most shmups is you die and it's all gone.
You die in one bullet as well.
Yeah, and there comes a point in Abadox where you can get like little overshield so you can survive longer, but if you die a certain way through the game, you might as well just restart the game because all your firepower is gone.
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing, you know, going briefly back to Soul Divide, because it's one of the few shmups I like. It took me ages to do the final level, because you've got to basically do three bosses, one after the other. And the first time, you don't know what the attack patterns are, so obviously you die. And then, because there's no level before it, you're pretty much having to fight the bosses with no upgrades. So then, suddenly, they're harder, just by virtue of not having any upgrades. So it feels like unless you're replaying the game from scratch after having beaten the game already, you're going to go in and you're going to have to basically do these three bosses with no upgrades because you can't be expected to do it first time. And I think that's unfair. And as you say, with some shmups, you get to a point where you have to restart because if you don't have the upgrades, you can't progress. So it's just so difficult.
Yeah, you go in there and, like, you hit a point, you have your spread shot, super laser, little defensive orbs, and, you know, a shot that shoots behind you, and that's how you're barely staying alive, and then you boof it, and you come back and you have one little pea shooter, and it's like, this is impossible. This can't be done now.
Yeah.
I kind of think the genre's mainly made for, like, really hardcore people that like that kind of thing. I mean, I like some difficult games. You know, I'm a big fan of the Mega Man series, for example. But I just find the difficulty and how it does the difficulty in shmups to just be too obnoxious.
Yeah, I mean, it was originally there just to get people to put more coins into the machine.
Oh, yeah, you can just keep dumping quarters then, or dimes or whatever.
But I do think that it would be nice to have an option to turn on a health meter instead of one-shot kills.
It would help.
Yeah, I mean, modern shmups can do that. I've not really played any modern shmups, so maybe they do do it. But I think having something like that would definitely make it a little bit more acceptable in this day and age, because it seems like even when they went onto the consoles, they were still made like arcade games where they were just really difficult.
Well, I mean, that's where you're going to get a lot of your replay value, was just, it's super hard. If I can just sort of muscle my way through the game, suddenly, because most shmups aren't very long. They're pretty damn short, honestly.
Yeah, you can beat most of them within half an hour.
But if it's, you know, you have to constantly keep taking swats at it, you're adding, quote, value, quote, to the game.
That's one of the good things with emulation of old arcade games. You can just pump in, like, virtual coins, like, as much as you want, and just continue and continue and continue. It does still get frustrating. I mean, like I said, R-Type has a checkpoint system, but a lot of games don't, and you get hit once and you will go back to the start of the level.
I don't have a whole lot of experience with a lot of this, because, I mean, I grew up in a house where any game that involved a gun was called a shoot 'em up. So I didn't even know this was an actual genre for a while.
Oh, this is its own wonderful world.
Yeah, so honestly, the shoot-em-up that I played most, aside from stuff like Galaga, is a game called Galactic Patrol, made by a company called Monkey Bite Games back in, like, the 90s. It was a 3D shoot-em-up, but, like, you would start from a perspective behind your ship, and then you would have segments that were top-down, and then you would have segments that were from the side, so you kind of had all the different various camera angles for shmups covered in this one.
That's actually kind of neat.
Yeah, it's just a shame I can't find it anymore. The company seems to have gone out of business, and all I can find to download is a demo that lets you play one level.
It's not nearly as fun.
Yeah.
Well, like, I think mainly with shmups, most of the ones that you would typically put in that genre, you know, going back to what Steve says, is generally the horizontal and vertical ones, like the 2D style things, they're the ones where you focus mainly on, like, the ship upgrades and dodging bullets. Kind of had an evolution with them, which I suppose started in, like, maybe the SNES era with games like Star Fox, you know, where you go into a more of a 3D perspective. I mean, I wouldn't classify them personally as shmups, although it's definitely that kind of thing. You're sort of in a ship, you're flying through space, and you're having to take down lots of enemy aircraft and avoiding enemy fire along a fixed route. So I do see the similarities, but I think that's where the games sort of evolved towards in that era. What do you think?
Yeah, it definitely took a turn into kind of like that 3D thing. I mean, in the 90s, everything had to be 3D. Like, with the new generation of consoles, stuff like the maybe not so much the SNES, even though it did kind of start on there, but from the PlayStation going forward, you did have everything had to be 3D. So you did see a lot more of these games popping up. It did kind of start with Star Fox.
I say it's a bit of a weird thing, because rail shooters like Sin and Punishment and Star Fox and Panzer Dragoon, I love. But then I hate shmups, like traditional ones. I think it's mainly because you're kind of focused on flying through and taking out enemies, mm-hmm. rather than just avoiding bullets like you are in 2D ones. So I think that kind of focus more on the game rather than the gunfire is what makes it more enjoyable. That's why I'm kind of unsure about whether I would class them as shmups. I mean, really, when you think about it, they kind of are. But because I hate one so much, and then I like the other, that's why, I don't know, my gut reaction is they're not connected, but my mind is telling me they are.
Well, if anything, I would say that a rail shooter is a subgenre of the shmup.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because, like, Star Fox, as this is a perfect time, a way to segue into the second game, is definitely a 3D shmup. It kind of puts you on a channel. It's not making it a rail shooter of sorts, but it's not a flight simulator, which I think is the hard break where it's like, oh, Star Fox 64, and all the other Star Fox games that came out that played the same, are those flight simulators? Not even remotely. Except for a couple segments, you're definitely locked in a shoot-em-up section.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 3D areas, the free-roaming bits, make it a bit further away from like a shmup. But definitely the traditional 2D style kind of feel more like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot easier to see the connection with something like Star Fox because, you know, you've got a space environment, you've taken out enemies, you've got these big extravagant bosses. But then when you compare it to something like, you know, Panzer Dragoon or, I mean, Hell, Sin and Punishment, where you're not even flying, then you kind of think, is it totally connected? But yeah, I see the argument for it, and I would say kinda.
Would say enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird seeing that evolution, because, I mean, the original Star Fox game was it just basically like polygonal? It was only kind of 3D in the perspective that you're flying away from the screen. I think Star Fox 64 made that full jump into making it seem more like of a 3D kind of thing.
Well, and Star Fox 64 was definitely 3D. Or not 64. Well, yeah, 64 was. But the original Star Fox was definitely a 3D game, but it was a bare-bones graphical 3D.
Yeah, they hadn't
any lesson, it would have just been wireframes for everything.
Yeah.
Really, Star Fox 64 is sort of like a remake of the original. I mean, it's basically the same story.
Yeah.
That's true for almost every Star Fox game.
Well, I think 64 specifically is a case of them finally making the game they wanted to make in the first place.
Yeah, I can see that. That's fair.
I definitely find 64 more playable than the original Star Fox. I did have difficulty with it because I'm kind of the opposite of Adam. I really prefer the 2D stuff and I can't really get into the 3D stuff as much. A lot of it's down to movement controls and moving around in a like pseudo 3D space. And I know it is more or less linear, but you have stuff coming from behind you. You've got to flip your ship around and stuff like that. I could never really get to grips with those kind of mechanics. Hence, I didn't get particularly far. I got as far as the level where you are a buggy on the ground instead of flying before my N64 decided to reset itself. And I went back in and found that it hadn't saved any progress.
No, it doesn't. No. It doesn't save progress.
Yeah, and I was I'm not going through all that again.
Yeah, it saves like your high score, and that's all it saves.
Yeah.
So like, get gold medals and stuff, I think it saves that. But any progress throughout the mission, it doesn't. But I mean,
why,
the game.
Why though?
I think it's because it only takes like maybe 45 minutes to beat the game.
Yeah, you can beat the game in under an hour without too much trouble.
And really, the game's, once you get used to it and how it plays, it's not overly difficult for a game either. Especially because you've got multiple routes, and there's like easier routes and difficult routes.
Mm-hmm.
Or more difficult. So like,
looking at you, Aquas.
Yeah. Is that the underwater one?
Yeah, that's the water one.
That's the underwater one.
The one and only mission where you play as the sub.
Yeah, because you, as Matt says, you've got like a buggy or a tank or whatever it is. On the ground, and then
it's
got, like,
called the Landmaster.
Landmaster.
And then you've got the Water Master, or whatever the fuck it's called, the sub,
the Blue Marine.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate what they did to try and, you know, make it a little bit more different, but the sub is kind of shit.
It's terrible. That whole level's garbage.
I mean, it's one level, so it's not too bad. But I think the whole alternate routes thing is a really good idea because they do it well as well. Because usually you have to do special things and that will enable you to go down a different path. And then you've got a different set of levels which will reach you to the end boss. And from what I remember, you have to do a certain route in order to get the true ending.
Mm-hmm. No, and then you get the true ending where you have to fight the hard, boss.
From what I remember, because I didn't get that far in this playthrough, isn't he just like a brain and some eyeballs?
Yeah. You shoot the face, and instead of turning into a robot, it shows a brain and eyeballs.
Yeah, I thought so. It's been a while since I've done it, but I vaguely remembered it. But it's really cool. I mean, I really like that alternate path mechanic. I do think not saving, in hindsight, is definitely a flaw for the game. I can sort of understand why they didn't bother, but you kind of have to sit down and do the whole thing, and that's a bit of a pain in the ass sometimes.
I want to say that the end or the 3DS release allowed you to save your progress.
Possibly. I only played that for a bit. I borrowed a friend's version of it. I can't remember whether or not it saved.
I'm pretty confident that saved your progress as you went along. So you could start over or you could continue your game, so...
My main issue with the Star Fox series is that most of the Star Fox games are basically just remakes.
Yeah.
Like, first one, and then you've got Star Fox 64, which is a remake of that story. And then, really, Star Fox Zero is a remake of 64?
Yeah, a reimagining of 64. And then you have Star Fox 64 3D, which is literally just Star Fox 64 HD.
And then Star Fox Adventures isn't even like a real shooter anymore.
No, it has like, what, 3 shoot-'em-up segments, and then the rest of it is a Zelda game. And not a bad Zelda game either, I would just like to throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely flawed, it definitely has its problems, but it's alright.
You had Star Fox Command on the DS, I think it was.
I forgot about Command.
And that was a different game. That was quite different.
I was thinking Star Fox Assault is the only like proper rail shooter that wasn't that same story.
Yeah.
But I forgot about Command. I mean, I'm kind of waiting to see what they do next with Star Fox, because I think they thought they were trying to do something a bit different with Zero, but because it is a reimagining of 64... It was kind of doing things different while still remaining the same.
Right.
It was sort of remaining the same and then fucking stuff up as well.
And like, what murdered Star Fox Zero was the mandatory motion controls for the shooting. If they hadn't made that mandatory, if they had just patched in a regular motion or a regular control scheme, it would have been fun.
Most of the time you're looking at the gamepad. So instead of looking at the beautiful HD image, you end up looking at this low-res screen for most of the time because that's what you have to look at to aim. So it seems like they kind of shot themselves in the foot doing that.
It wasn't a good idea.
No. But Star Fox 64 is a good game. I think it holds up as being a really good rail shooter.
And one thing, since we started off talking about this, one thing I like about Star Fox 64 is the fact that it goes through all these themes. It covers a lot of themes within one title. You do have a underwater segment, and the game plays the same, but like your environment's completely different. It's harder to see. You fight a giant clam for a boss. Like, one level takes you to the surface of the sun. There's a couple levels that put you in tanks.
The fire level's cool.
Yeah, Solaris.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm also a big fan of the Independence Day level.
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah, we've got to stop everything from... Yeah, that was in one of the 3D ones, wasn't it? The open ones.
Yeah. You're basically all range mode for the whole level.
Yeah, that was cool.
They gave you a nice variety of bosses. Sometimes you fought enemy ships. One, you fought a robot flying in space. Like you said, you fought a clam. There's a couple levels that... There's several bioweapons. You fought, like, this weird monster on the sun. And if you lost Slippy, you'd had to go to... what's the name of the level?
The desert one.
It's the desert tank one.
Yeah.
You got to fight this really creepy-looking alien.
I mean, that leads me on to another thing. That's another criticism I have, is that most of your companions are shit.
I mean, not
including General Pepper, because he's not part of the team. But Falco's a dick. Slippy is fucking useless. And Peppy's just forgettable. To me, the fucking robot dude is the best one.
Yeah, Falco is a complete knob. He's like, oh, I need your help. And then you help him, and he's like, well, thanks.
I guess I should be thankful.
You fucking should.
Yeah, you should.
That's fucking well.
Next to, like, I will not lie and say I've gone into the first mission where he goes like, oh, no, get this guy off me, and I just shot him down immediately because I didn't have to listen to him.
Yes, but then you can't get to, then you can't get the secret route.
Yeah, you can go there. You can get there another way.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, you can...
You throw his corpse into the waterfall and it opens up.
No, well, you can't go, you can't beat that boss, but you can take you the can alternate go. Routes through the asteroids and...
No, but what I'm saying is, like, you know...
Get the secret in that level.
Yeah, you can't get the secret in that level, but you can hook back over to Suffer in Sector 6 another way, so...
Okay.
That's another thing as well with the multiple routes is that, you know, you can go onto the path, but through different levels, so you've got multiple opportunities to basically do what you want. I mean, usually I find that I end up doing the same path every time, but I mean, theoretically, you can mix things up.
It was a good design.
Yeah.
It was well designed in that aspect.
I actually think that is one of the major advantages of the series is those multiple paths that you've got to do special things to do. Panzer Dragoon's Fight also had that, but it worked a little bit differently. It wasn't quite as smooth because it didn't have as many, you know, different levels and multiple right. paths. It still had it, but it was a bit more limited. And I think games need to do that, that are in the rail shooter genre. I think those multiple routes are definitely the best way to do it. I mean, with Shmoop in general. I mean, Darius Gaiden has tons of routes.
It gives a lot more variety to the... Or it gives more replay value because there's stuff you can find that you didn't even know you could go there before or how to get there or like in the asteroid, you can take the warp gate to the asteroid, get this really trippy LSD level, and then plop out on the other side of the map.
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it before, but with 2D ones, you can typically beat them in like about half an hour, and the 3D ones, less than an hour. So they are quite short games, and I think having those multiple paths just add to the replayability. Yeah. And I think it's something that, you know, just should be done, really.
So, moving away from the actual gameplay of them, what is the reason that all the Star Fox games were renamed in Europe?
I have no idea.
Because you had Starwing on the SNES, and on the N64, it's Lilac Wars.
I actually know the reason for this, and it's because of the Germans. So, I mean, most people hold, you know, World War One and Two against the Germans.
Right.
But really, people should be angry for the Germans because of Lilac Wars. I mean, it is a better name, to be fair. But there's actually a German company called Starvox, and they couldn't call it Star Fox because they thought it sounded a bit too similar.
Huh. Interesting.
Oh. They were basically worried that there'd be legal problems with Starvox, and they just thought, fuck it, we'll just rename it. So there's no delay for the game, which is why subsequent games like obviously Star Fox Adventures and Star Fox Assault were called Star Fox. So it was only really Lilac Wars because of the whole Star Fox thing, and they didn't want to get the game delayed or anything.
So basically the same reason that Biohazard got releases Resident Evil, because there was a heavy metal band in the US called Biohazard.
Oh, right, okay. Did they do it intentionally because they were worried that there would be a legal problem? Or did they...
I believe so.
Okay. I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, Resident Evil's a really good name. Biohazard's cool, but I think Resident Evil's better.
Yeah.
Although, admittedly, Biohazard kind of fits the series as a whole in perspective.
Yeah, but Resident Evil fits that first one really well.
Resident Evil fits, like, the first one well. And if it's Zero and a handful of others where there are houses involved.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much others.
Well, there we go. Mystery solved.
Before we kind of conclude this, I think there's one final thing we should probably touch upon, which is not necessarily shmups, but shmup sections. Because I can think of quite a few games where they're actually other genres, but include shmups as, like, mini-games or separate levels.
Yep.
I mean, I mentioned about Mega Man 8, which has a couple of shmup sections. But another one that I played, which, again, was relatively enjoyable, was Shadows of the Damned on the 360 and PS3. There was, like, a whole section where you had to do the entire level in a shmup, and then the demon that you had to kill was the boss of the shmup. And it was really neat. It was a little bit tough, and I found that to be like the hardest thing when playing on the hardest difficulty, because, you know, I suck at the genre. But it was neat. And there was another game by Grasshopper as well, Black Knight Sword, which had a shmup section. Those are the ones I can think of. Can you think of any more?
Well, we played Official Father Christmas at Christmas. That kind of had one. It wasn't really a shmup, but you were like avoiding stuff coming towards you while you were trying to drop the presents down the chimneys.
Yeah, and I suppose in that regard, maybe the Segata Sanshiro game, there's a similar type of game where you're in a sled and you have to drop presents into the chimneys, which I suppose is that kind of thing. Oh, and didn't Rocket Knight Adventures have a shmup section? I want to say there was one over the streets of London or something, which was a shmup. I think so. So yeah, I think there are quite a few games which had shmup sections.
That's probably because it's a very easy way to mix up a game.
Yeah, that's true. And as you say, it's quite a popular genre, especially back in the day. I mean, whilst I personally don't care for it, well, don't care for the 2D ones, you know, it was really big in the arcades because, you know, it was kind of one of the founding genres. I think shmups and platformers were the kind of big ones, you know, yeah, back in the heyday. So I can see why they'd do it.
Well, I think that just about wraps everything up there then. I can't think of much more to say personally.
Yeah, it's definitely quite a divisive genre, but it's also quite a varied genre as well. So a lot of people will have their preferences with it, but there is kind of something for everyone, really.
Yeah, definitely. At least for me, it was the 3D ones, so I suppose there's still something.
So yeah, that basically wraps everything up there. Shmups are good if you ask anybody but Adam, and they've had a long history and will go down in fame if they ever go down at all. Let's have a quick musical interlude and we'll move on to the specialist subjects. Going to roll on into sort of our specific special topics. We kicked that off last episode, and we'll start off with you, Adam.
Well, the game I'm covering, the Pokemon game I'm covering, is actually a rail shooter, moving, you know, from our topic to Pokemon, and that's Pokemon Snap. It's not quite action-packed or as shooty-shooty as, you know, the games we've covered, but it's still definitely a game that involves shooting, even if it is a camera shoot. It was made on the N64 by HAL Laboratory, who are famous for Smash Brothers. I think HAL does, isn't it?
They did him for a long time.
I think HAL did Kirby and Smash.
Yeah, I was going to say Kirby was their big one, and then they were the original studio behind Smash.
Yeah, I seem to remember that, because they had the logo with the dog and the eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
Very odd.
It was a spin-off title. It was released on the N64, but it was also on the Wii, and was it on the Wii U Virtual Console as well?
Yes.
What you do in it is you have to take pictures of Pokemon in various different situations. You're in like a little cart as it goes around the levels. You take pictures of Pokemon doing different things, and depending on how good your picture is and how exciting the photograph is, you get more points. The more points you get enable you to unlock different items that you can use to make Pokemon do different things, and you can also get more levels. Typically, the way to get more levels is by doing special things, so getting Pokemon to do special moves which unlock different routes, but obviously you can unlock it just by progression. And it's weird. There are, I don't remember how many Pokemon there are. I should have probably looked it up before, but I think there are like 61 Pokemon.
Something like that.
So it doesn't actually include all the Pokemon, which is quite disappointing for a lot of people. But I think the main reason for that is that it didn't actually start out as a Pokemon game. From what I remember, I think it started out as like a Jack and the Beanstalk game. Yeah, and they stuck like the Pokemon license in it to make Pokemon. I imagine that they probably had different characters for the original Jack and the Beanstalk game, and then they just changed all the skins and altered it from there and didn't want to add too much extra. it's a game that, like, a lot of Pokemon fans really like. It's a very relaxing game, and some of the pictures you can do are really neat. And it got pretty decent scores. I mean, they kind of mainly were, like, 8 out of 10s, you know, across the board. As for sales, I think it was relatively popular, but not, like, massively popular. I think it sold all right, and critically it was all right as well. And I never really understood why there was never a sequel. I don't know whether it was too much effort for them, because of, like, all the different things the Pokemon could do, and obviously people would expect a lot more Pokemon in a sequel, including Generation 2. So maybe it was just because of the effort involved that they never bothered with a sequel.
I think part of it is it didn't sell well enough initially to justify a sequel, and it became more popular later.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird, because, I mean, stuff like the Wii U, where you had the gamepad, would have been perfect for it. And yeah. I don't think that got the Virtual Console release until, like, really late in the life cycle.
Like, right before the Wii U was declared dead is when they released it.
Yeah, because I remember people asking for Pokemon Snap on the Wii U for ages, because they were like, look at the system, it's designed for this.
It would have made so much sense.
And I very much doubt they adapted the original game to include the Wii U pad, other than, like, portable. No. So I kind of think it was a bit disappointing from that regard. I mean, to be fair, they could do another Pokemon Snap game on the Switch, and I think it would work well. Because it's got the gyro controls and everything. And, yeah, I think it would be pretty good. Whether or not they'll do that is another thing. But Pokemon Snap's one of those really weird spin-off games for the series, but it's one that typically fans really love. As you say, Steve, I think it was more of a thing where it got popular after the fact. But I think if they did another game now, or they made, like, a remake of the original, I think it would sell, like, you know, really, really, really well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, yes, that's the Pokemon game I'm covering this week, Pokemon Snap. It's a neat little game. It's kind of a bit more experimental for the series, but all in all, pretty good.
Awesome. And, what about you, Matt? What did you got for us this month?
As with last month, I have a thematic Doom mod that ties into the theme of the episode. This one is the imaginatively titled Action Doom, which basically tries to recreate a shmup. It kind of succeeds. You don't have any enemies coming from behind you, and it's completely linear. It is still in the Doom engine, which is, you know, you're still shooting stuff as you normally would. The difference is the enemies come from side and from the front, and you can see their bullets. Their bullets are fairly slow, so you can, like, dodge bullets and stuff like that, and everything dies in one hit. The regular enemies do. You've got bosses that don't. And it's an interesting little mod. It's quite flawed. The first level isn't amazing, and it gets really, really bullet hell at the end of it. But the second level kind of takes it into a different direction, and you kind of really see the meat of the mod. There are three separate ways you can go. You can go through a forest, which has got, like, slightly camouflaged enemies that you've got to shoot through trees. Or you can go down to the coast, and there's a boat section. You're controlling a boat going up a river, and you have to move left or right to avoid rocks, which is very, very difficult because the rocks have huge hitboxes. And there's a third way, which actually takes you to like a car section, and you've got to jump from car to car and shoot all the enemies that kind of, like, pop out from the cars. It's difficult. I never actually got past the second level. There were four in total. And it's just something a little bit different. It's something that most Doom mods haven't really done before, that one-hit kill kind of thing, which, if you couldn't see their bullets coming, would be just impossible. But the fact that you can, you've got a lot of dodging going on. Yeah, it's interesting.
Is this the only Doom mod you've not been able to beat, then?
Oh, God, no. There's hundreds that I've not been able to beat. Some mods, people just go full ham, and they'll stick you with a pistol and 20 spider demons. And it's like, yeah, that's not happening.
What, you mean like the John Romero one?
Sigil, yeah. Don't remind me of Sigil. The good thing about this one, though, is you do have a basic gun with unlimited ammo, but you do have, like, better guns with limited ammo. So you do always have an option if you do run out of ammo. There's a knife as well, but that's pointless, and you're going to die immediately if you use a knife. It is quite difficult, but it's worth a look if you want to see something different. I would recommend using a level select cheat to get past level 1, because it just gets silly towards the end. But, yeah, check it out. Action Doom, it's called.
Neat. Steven, you got a RPG for us for this?
I'm kind of cheating, but the one that comes to mind is Kingdom Hearts, once again, because the gummy ship sections, which you use to travel from world to world, are basically shmups. Like, you know, it's not even trying to hide it. And some of them are much better than others. In particular, Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 3 have much better gummy ship sections. The first one is just kind of eh. But yeah, I mean.
Now, with these gummy ships, now that I'm thinking about it, because I haven't really played a whole lot of Kingdom Hearts at all, would those be like gummy ships as in Disney's Gummy Bears?
No.
Aw.
No, I don't know where they got it from. It's just little blocks.
Well, that's not quite as fun, because Gummy Bears was a great show.
Great theme song as well.
Right? It was good times. I don't really have a solid tie-in, but the obscure console that I would like to talk about briefly was the Vectrex. Anybody here know what the Vectrex was?
Yes.
No.
I know the name.
The Vectrex was a really neat console that was dropped in 82. It had a monochromatic CRT screen built in. It was like 8 or 9 inches. And it was actually a vertical screen, so it wasn't like the aspect ratio was, it was taller than it was wide. But it used vector graphics, which actually incorporated a lot cleaner look for what it was trying to do. But because it was just black and white, they actually had like little card inserts that you'd put over the screen to give color and texture to the games. Like give, you know, pop backgrounds and stuff into it. It was actually really cool. The controller popped out of the front. It was a little 4-button with a joystick. And I believe you could plug another one in for some co-op games. It wouldn't dock in like the other one would, because obviously there's only room for one. But it was claimed by the video game crash in 83. The company went out of business. Like, the last one was produced in 84, and that was the last anybody heard about it. I've done a little bit of research into it. Recently, the consoles are starting to fail, and it's a real sad time because it was a really neat concept. Replacement parts are super hard to get. They're very, very expensive. Just the consoles themselves, to get one that's in mediocre condition, you'll drop $500 on one.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing is just going to be so bad.
Yeah. And once that monitor goes, that's it.
I've only seen one in the wild once, probably about 15 years ago or so. It was only £30. I should have picked it up.
It was probably broken too.
No, it was in a secondhand game shop.
Oh,
so they do like guarantees and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, you should have grabbed that.
Yeah,
just because it's neat. If anything,
the shop doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, I should have them.
Probably because they were just giving stuff like that away. Although 15 years ago, there were probably still a lot more of them that were alive.
Yeah.
So.
And plus, we didn't have the massive retro game boom that we do now.
Right. The demand's not there. I got to see one in the wild at Tokyo and Tulsa several years ago. This dude had a big old game shop, and I don't think he was selling it. I think he just had it on display because it was cool. And I didn't fully realize what it was at the time. I'm like, that's just kind of a neat thing. As far as I was concerned, it was a, because it wasn't running, it was a basically like a custom job. And I didn't realize it was its own unique console. It was a neat console. It had a couple shoot 'em up style, like there was an asteroid style game on there. And yeah, just kind of one of those things that someone had a brilliant idea. Its sales were decently strong right at the start. And it was claimed by a collapsing economy over here, and that was it. It was lost to time. Someone actually made some games for it not too long ago, I think. Just randomly. Carts and everything, carts and inserts.
Huh.
You know, for the seven people who were actually going to go buy them.
Yeah.
But still, it was cool. It was a fun time. I think with all that covered, I think the last thing to do here is to say goodbye and look forward to next month when we see you all again.
Yeah, and it's time to wrap up. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye, and see you next time on the Retro Odyssey.
Did anyone else notice Falco's beak is wider than his face? What the fuck is that about?